This is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi. With me is Lisa, and Travis is back from wherever he was last week.
Up in my office.
Up in your office. All right. All right. Well, one of my favorite things to do is to watch storms come in or off of Lake Superior. It is like just this ominous, weird darkness that's coming towards you. And I don't, for some reason, the power of it just kind of excites me. I have been caught, though, on the water when one of those things showed up. And that was a little bit scarier.
Mm-hmm.
And you could kind of see it coming, and you're kind of racing back to not get stuck in it. But the waves start way before the actual storm gets to you. And today's passage is really about the disciples and Jesus being in one of those storms, being caught in a storm. And what we're going to be looking at is Mark chapter 4, and it is a story of Jesus and the disciples. Lisa, you want to read those verses 35 through 41?
On that day when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across the other side." And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he awoke and rebuked the wind, and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?"
This story is just interesting to me because Jesus is sleeping in the stern, which I believe is the back of the boat. And he's with the cast, or at least some of them were part of the cast of The Deadliest Catch. They're all fishermen. And they get caught in this storm on the Sea of Galilee. And the Sea of Galilee is known for their storms coming up quickly. There's mountain ranges not too far from there. And I think it's like 700 feet or something like that below sea level is the Sea of Galilee. And then the mountains range up to like 9,000 feet. And so warm air, cold air mixed together, boom, you got yourself a nice little storm. And so they're caught in a storm, but these guys have been caught in storms before. So this is no little Yankee Clipper. This is something significant. There's something going on in the midst of this storm. The disciples were facing a literal storm in the middle of it. And they assume in the midst of this, they wake up Jesus and they assume something right away. Number one, that Jesus is sleeping, which I think is fascinating. But they also assume that he doesn't care. Just by their question. Do you not care that we're perishing or that we're about to drown? And depending on the how you use that word, like, do you not know? Or is it like, hey, we're about to go down here and you don't even care? Like, why do they think that?
It's funny to me because it's almost like they're like, dude, wake up. Are you too stupid to see what's going on? And like you said, I've been caught in a storm. A couple years ago, my brother-in-law and my niece and my oldest son were out duck hunting on Chassel Bay, and it was raining, and we took a chance anyway, and then pretty soon the wind picked up, the waves started going, there's lightning and thunder clapping around all around us, and we're like, we got to get in the water, pull decoys, do all this stuff, and get out, and it was scary. Like, there's no way that you would assume that somebody could sleep through something like that. And so for those guys to see Jesus sleeping, yeah, they're like, either are you stupid or are you crazy? And we've walked through those passages the past couple of weeks where, you know, Jesus was accused of being crazy by his family. So there's this context of things going on that maybe these guys are thinking about.
Well, also like get up and bail type thing. Like, don't you care that we're going down? Can't you do something about this? They've seen already the power that he has, and they're really asking some questions of, does he even care about them? Because we're about to die in the midst of this.
Well, and two, I mean, the passage would suggest that Jesus told him to get in the boat in the first place, right? So not only are they he's sleeping in the boat, but he's the one that's like, hey, guys, why don't you get in the boat with me and go to the other side? And so in that regard, I mean, sometimes I think that question of don't you care is it makes the question a little bit more poignant, I suppose. He put him in the boat in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. And he's sleeping now.
What have you gotten us into?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a questioning of, because they're starting to understand who Jesus is by this point. They're starting to understand, and they think they kind of know him. They think they know that he is God at this point. But they don't totally understand all of this. They don't understand, like, they understand where he's getting his power, all of those things. And they've seen him cast out demons. They've seen him do other miraculous things. And at this point, they're going, well, why don't you care enough to save us in the midst of this? And I was thinking about in our own lives, are there storms in your life where that question arises? And a storm can be anything or everything that causes you to ask that question, God, don't you care? And the storms that we face, it could be something like shocking news from the doctor. The storm could be devastating news that your spouse wants to leave you. The storm could be a loss of a job. The storm could be a tragic accident. While it also could be just like general numbness, like I'm just here. And you almost would rather have some tragic accident just so you have some feeling. A storm could be darkness that will not lift. Like, it's just gloom in your soul and you can't shake it. And you're going, God, don't you care? A storm could be loneliness that you just feel in your gut. It could be an ever present anxiety that you just feel paralyzed in your worry. And that question comes up, God, don't you care? Don't you care that we're drowning here? Don't you care that we're perishing here? And the disciples are saying, if you loved us, you would not let us go through this. Don't you care that I'm dying here? Don't you care that I'm perishing? And if that's true for them, it's probably true for us. And so what happens in the story, Mark says that Jesus got up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet, be still. The wind died down and it was completely calm, which is a very interesting, I think, picture here. Like, if you've been in the water and there's big waves, it may change to smaller waves, but it takes time, right? But this text tells us, and how the words are used in this, it went from super wavy, super rough to calm, to gone, to done, and kind of a miraculous thing in the midst of this. And their dire situation, it in the water becomes completely calm as glass. And this begs the question, how for them, and why are the wind and the waves listening to him? And the reason is their creator had put them into motion. He was their creator, the wind and the waves. He was there at the very beginning. He is the Alpha and the Omega. The wind and the waves, they know his voice. They heard the voice of their master creator, and they just obeyed. Not just partially, which I think is so interesting in the text. It's not just like, well, the winds calmed down and the waves got smaller and we were okay. No, it says it was calm. He said, and he doesn't pray. Jesus doesn't. He doesn't call upon it. He just does it. Like, he just, by his word, they obey him. And so Jesus, he's sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, don't you care if we drowned? He got up and he rebuked the wind and the waves. Quiet, be still. Then the wind and the waves died down. Jesus in the back of the boat, he's asleep. Can you guys imagine, like, just the fret that they're going through and just kind of being irritated? You ever been in a situation where somebody is like, the world seems like it's falling apart and they're just like, calm as all get out?
Yeah, that, like, I don't know, any given Tuesday, you might look in my kitchen and see me frantic about something and Matt just like super chill.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. But why is Matt super chill?
Well, he's not worried about the same things I'm worried about. He's not generally worried about anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is the same thing for Jesus in the text, right? Yeah. Like, he's just not alarmed.
Well, he knows what's going on and he's got control over it. There was a friend of mine that had their sewer back up recently and like they went downstairs and thought maybe it was just a clogged toilet. So they flushed it and then the drain in the basement starts pulsating things out of it. And so, you know, rightly so, they were alarmed. Call a guy, comes in, and he's just super chill. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, a good Uper guy coming to fix the plumbing. Oh, yeah, no worries, we got this. And, like, he's super calm while the family's freaking out. So yeah. The basement fills up with sewage.
Well, that's the difference between them and Jesus. Why yeah. He can sleep, why he's sleeping like a baby, I can imagine him doing a little snoring over there in the back of the stern and them going, like, what in the world is wrong with him? Is because he knows he has control. He's in control. And he wasn't scared because they were scared, because he was the one in control and not them. And so the person who's completely in control of the storm was in the boat with the disciples. And I think that's an important part of this passage.
What's really interesting to me is the language that is used when Jesus, who is not concerned about the storm. Well, that's not the right language. I think that he's concerned about the people in the storm, but he has control over all of the things. He has control of the boat. He knows what's going on. But he stands and says, peace be still. And as you said, it's totally quiet. And it reminded me of this really lovely passage in Psalm that's very familiar. The passage is Psalm 46:10. It says, be still and know that I am God. But before that very famous verse, the first part of the Psalm says this, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Though the waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble and swell. And so God is the one who shows, the God of the Old Testament is the God of the New Testament who shows up and says, peace be still, to both to the people in the boat and also the waves. I think that's pretty cool.
It's also interesting his response to them. His response to them, like he says, you can almost imagine like a little cheer, like, yeah, like the waves are all calm. They're all excited now. High-fiving, like Jesus did it type of a thing. But he looks at the disciples and he says, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? And that question is a really interesting picture of what he's doing in the midst of this. It's an interesting picture of what Jesus, like he's the one who calms it, but he was in the boat with them the whole time. He was the one who was calm. And so that question reveals something about their faith. It reveals their faithlessness in the midst of this. There's a picture of they don't totally understand who he is.
No, but they have enough faith to say, Jesus, help us.
That's probably the only thing they did right, right?
Right. Like,
yeah.
Which seems to be an important thing.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's not like Peter's like, John, help me here. Right?
Right. But their question is a question of, does he even care? It's not, they don't actually say, hey, Jesus, help us. They say, do you even care? The question, because the storm is there, the question then becomes, well, because the storm is here, he doesn't care. And so I think that's the question of the faithful, like their faithlessness, is it's connected to them not understanding who he actually is. They have, it's not like they had a low understanding of who he was. Like they called him teacher, they called him rabbi, they left everything to go and follow him. So they knew some things about him, but that faithlessness, the storm didn't cause their faithlessness. The storm revealed their lack of faith. And I think that's an important distinction in there. It reveals that they don't really get it. They don't really understand who's in the boat with them.
I just wonder, too, like, do you think it always takes... I mean, is a storm... Are storms and wildernesses or whatever language you want to use that appears in Scripture, like, is that the primary way that God reveals to us our need of him? Is it the way that he is frequently found working and teaching us about the sinfulness of our hearts and how faithless we are? I was just trying to think of my own life and what storms have meant. I don't know that I've looked at them that way. Like, oh, this is an opportunity to increase my faith. I have historically looked at storms as an opportunity to be like, oh, God, help me. Like, as if I had enough faith. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying something backwards and actually really interesting.
Backwards, huh?
It is backwards. Don't you think it's a little backwards to the way that we typically approach what we think God is doing in the storm?
Yeah. I was thinking about, like, when I first really owned my faith in college. Like, I was on an emotional high. I was on fire. Like, it was like, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to serve God and live my life for him. And I'm reminded of the passage out of John 16, 33, where Jesus is talking. He said, I've told you these things so that you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. We think that because we have a relationship with Jesus, that it's just going to be smooth sailing all the time. But we're still in the world. The world's still broken, still fallen. But that's those trials and temptations that temper our faith, that those crucible moments where it's like, you can go one of two ways. You know, you can bail and not trust, or you can lean in more.
Well, we also have enough faith to pray for God to take away the storm. And I think that's what you're saying at the beginning. They wake him up, right? Like, they're like, hey, you got to do something. We trust you enough that you could take away the storm. But they don't trust him enough to understand that he's in control of the storm. Like, he's in, like... He allowed the storm to come. He knew. That's why he's sleeping, because it doesn't even faze him. And I think that's the hard part in the midst of any storm that you have, whether it be a job, whether it be a relationship, whether it be a financial situation, is to go, okay, the storm is here. It's here. And what we normally pray for is for God just to take it away. But the reality is that he's in the boat with us, and he's in the boat with us, and there is a faith increaser happening in the midst of that. And so, do we have enough faith to believe that God can use the storm in our life and he for his good, for his purpose, for his will? To do, in the Bible, it's pretty clear about that he's working for our good. Do we have enough faith to believe that? That's a different type of faith. I want him to take it away. I want comfy PJs. I want my comfy slippers. I do not want to be in the midst of depths of Lake Superior, right? In a boat. I want to be out of the storm. But yet, can I believe that God is using that storm in my life, in such a way that will bring good? That's a different type of faith. And I think that's what happens in the midst of this, is that's why he asked that question. Do you not have faith? Do you not really know who I am?
If I think back on some of the storms in my life where I've been the one of like, Jesus, wake up, don't you care? Like, you can look back on those things if you've walked with God for a while and see how those storms have produced a stronger faith. Or when we look back and we see how God was there, he did show up. And that's just a testament to God's goodness, but it also is those moments where, you know, I use the crucible example, like, it's an opportunity to purify our faith, to refine our faith, to grow our trust in him as we walk with him. But it's a different perspective of, like, don't you care?
In Luke, it talks about Simon, and there's some type of storm in Simon's life. And in Luke chapter 22, it says, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat. And then it says, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. And so Simon's facing a dark night. Satan was trying to destroy him. But Jesus said, I have prayed for you, that your faith may not fail. Everything else might be destroyed, but your faith will not be destroyed. And so there's this real fight, I think, in the midst of that is to not lose our faith in the darkness of times, to believe that God is doing something, that he's in control, and that he can bring good out of something that is horrific. I've, you know, hung out with lots of people who've lost their faith in the midst of the storm. And God was not there. He didn't answer my prayer. He didn't take the storm. He didn't calm the sea. And some of the storms that we have in life will go with us until we meet him in glory. It's a storm that is just there. Like there's a pain, there's a wave. But this story is really interesting to me because it mimics the story of an Old Testament story of Jonah. And you see in there, in the story of Jonah, Jonah's asleep. Jesus is asleep. Jonah is in the water in a boat. Jesus is in the water in a boat. The sailors have to wake both of them up. Jesus is with fishermen. Jonah is with some sailors. And the waves are just kind of pushing up against. And it's raging. It's a raging storm. And in the story of Jonah, it says, you have to throw me in, basically, to the water. Because Jonah recognizes that it's God's wrath, because he's running away from what God told him what to do. And he recognizes God's wrath, this storm. He says, if you throw me away and I perish, you will live. And you go, oh, that's different. That's not what Jesus did. He just spoke and it calms it down. But then if you really think about what Jesus is saying here is, like, the faith that we have, like, in the midst of the storm, he's really trying to, as you said, purify our faith to make sure it's genuine, because the thing that actually will kill us or we will perish isn't just in this life, it's the next. It's eternity that he's talking about. Do you actually believe in me? Do you actually hold to this? And so in Jesus' story, he doesn't jump into the water. But then you think about, like, Jesus' life and what he does, like, the scriptures are very clear. There is a storm, there is a wrath, there is a fury of God because of our sin and rebellion, just like Jonah. There's this sin and rebellion, and the wrath of God is upon us. Condemnation is what the Bible says is coming upon us, right? And Jesus goes to the cross, and he takes the full wrath for us. The one who knew no sin, the Bible says, becomes sin on our behalf. And all of the wrath of God comes down upon him. And he, with arms stretched out, goes, it is finished. And in that moment, the storm is calmed. The storm is calmed. Like, there is no wrath of God coming after us if you are in Christ. There's no more waves. There's no more wind. There's no more wrath because of what Jesus did. In the cross, when we place our faith in what Jesus did for us on the cross, the wrath of God is no longer our storm. It's no longer the fury of punishment. And that's the incredible part of this story, is I think what Jesus is preparing them for is things that are coming, that they could possibly lose their faith, which if they lose their faith, it's much more dangerous, much worse than dying in a storm. It's much bigger, and he's preparing their hearts for this thing in the midst of this, that he is God.
Well, yeah, and I was just thinking, when you went to Simon, and, you know, right before Jesus says that, and then Peter betrays Jesus, he denies Jesus. But I was reminded of the way that Peter writes of the refining of our faith in 1 Peter. And it just really, I'm going to read these passages. It's just the first chapter of 1 Peter, a few verses. But it's as if the man who was on the boat with Jesus was preparing him for trials. That's what 1 Peter is about. It's a letter to people who are in the middle of great trial and great storms. And he says the reason for these, God uses that storm, that boat that he was with Jesus was with Peter. And then Peter writes this, right? He says, in this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus. And so Peter on the boat is a different man than the Peter who writes this letter because he was on the boat.
Yep. Yep. Well, in the beautiful picture of Jesus on the cross, if Jesus plunged himself into the sea of sin and death and eternal condemnation, all of God's wrath coming upon him, nothing that he did but what we did, and he chose to go to the cross for us, to die for us on the cross, if he didn't abandon us in our ultimate storm, why would he abandon us in these other storms? Like, why? He's there in the boat with us. These storms are faith builders, as you said. They're there to refine our faith. They're there to prove the genuineness of our faith. Why would he abandon us now? He surely cares. It's not a question of, do you not care? We're drowning. Of course I care. But if we can trust him for this thing that he went to the cross for us, then we have to be able to trust him in the storms that we have in this world, in the temporal world, in whatever we're dealing with, because he's there in the boat with us. We can, I think, also in the midst of this, if we start to understand that and start to live in that, our cries, Jesus, don't you care, turn into cries, Jesus, I trust you. Even though I'm not understanding totally why this storm is there, but I trust you in the midst of the storm because you're with me in the boat. That's good news you can use.
Thanks for hanging out with us this week. If you guys have questions or comments or topics that you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear from you. You can email those to travis@evangelup.org. If you want to catch up on any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes, just search Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform, and you can always find those at our website, evangelup.org.